Here's some exciting news for Coast to Coast fans. If you're already a Streamlink member, you know what a super value our subscriber service is. For around 15 cents a day, you get such great features as podcasts. That's automatic downloads of Coast to Coast shows directly onto your computer desktop or MP3 player. But now, we've greatly expanded our full show library, so you have access to multi-year downloads. Imagine having hundreds of your favorite Coast to Coast shows right at your fingertips to listen to, collect, and take on the go with you. As a Streamlink member, you also get access to a whole library of Art Bell Classic Somewhere in Time shows, available as streamed broadcasts. Plus, our fun live chat sessions, held twice a month. There's never been a better time to join Streamlink. Visit coasttocoastam.com today to sign up on our secure servers. Now we take you back to the night of July 8th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Stan Tennant. Stan?
Hi.
As you heard me mention on the air, one of the guys that I consider to be the real McCoy is Gordon Michael Scallion. And prior to his acquire, he used to describe his ability to do prophecy as seeing three TV screens. It was just the analogy he used so that the audience could understand it. One would be brighter and colorful, and the other two faded and less likely, indicating there is nothing locked in stone, but the most likely prophecy was the brightest picture that he would see. But before he acquired this ability to prophesize, he had an experience where he just about died, and he was in the hospital and saw this array, this incredible array of geometric patterns. That's exactly what he said. And it sort of resonated when you talked about geometric patterns leading to this, was it Pandes meditation?
Pardes.
Pardes,
it's the word,
I'm sorry.
Paradise.
I'm sorry, Pardes.
Say paradise.
Paradise.
Yeah, and it refers to the Garden of Eden.
And all of a sudden that clicked with me, and I wonder if he entered that same sort of meditative state. Of course, there's no way to know, but I'm just relating that to you, that he made a very, he went out of his way to be very specific about this incredible array of geometric shapes that he saw.
You're making an excellent point. I have no knowledge of Gordon Michael Scallion's work. It's not something that I've studied, so I can't say anything explicit. But, in fact, you're making an excellent point. It's not just Gordon Michael Scallion, but ordinary mathematical researchers have reported that if you turn over in your mind geometric forms, you sometimes have an unusual experience. There were some hyperdimensional drawings, stereograms, hyperstereograms, in a book by Brisson called Hypergraphics, I believe, mm-hmm. that I remember, some of the researchers described as it was causing in themselves unusual experiences. But you know, there's a very big difference, and Judaism makes a big point of this, and I think Christianity and Islam do too, between the particular experience of a talented individual, such as maybe Gordon Michael Scallion is, and a tradition that can be passed on from generation to generation that codifies a particular meditation that has a particular and safe result within the context of the tradition.
Well, is it not possible, Stan, that Stan Tennant might make his way to this particular Pardes meditation in a very specific mathematical way, and somebody else might, in effect, stumble onto what...
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. The key, though, is that if you want, let's say, and this is part of the discussion that I have when I'm trying to explain to people what it is I think I found here, because after all, what I've come upon, and which we haven't discussed this evening yet, is a means of understanding the source of the Hebrew, Greek, and Arabic alphabets. And the question becomes, well, why do you create an alphabet? Why do you write things down, and how do you do that? Well, you do that because you want to pass something on explicit. You don't want just a personal experience.
Sure.
You know, you can have a near-death experience falling off a donkey, but it's not necessarily repeatable.
I understand.
All right. Well, if you're talking about a spiritual tradition as opposed to a talented individual, then you have to record somehow the exercise that leads to the experience. And the question is, can you do that in words? No, you really can't. Most people who've had these extraordinary experiences say that they're ineffable, that they're not describable in words. So you have to create a kind of notation, not that describes the experience, but that's kind of like Arthur Murray teaching people to dance the waltz by painting
yes.
footprints on the ballroom floor.
Of course.
Well, that's what we think is going on here, that in fact, like what happens spontaneously to certain talented individuals, there is a long tradition, a Torah tradition, later the Christian Bible, later the Quran, and other groups that are related to these two, that have explicit, they've charted out a kind of science of consciousness. You know, when I was listening to your discussion, your advertisement for the Magellan navigation system, it
yes.
really hit me directly. We're talking about navigating here.
Oh, yes.
We're talking about these codes not being prophecy per se, but rather a navigation system by which a person who is prepared and talented might be able to achieve that level of consciousness.
Have you reached it?
Well, I can tell you I've had certain experiences, but I'm not that saintly a person. When I first came on this, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I had been studying these patterns in the text of Genesis
right.
for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I read at one point that some of the teachings were that if you were just able to master the letters of the alphabet, sometimes you could have a Kabbalistic experience, whatever
right.
that might be.
Right.
So I said, okay. I hadn't really paid a lot of attention to it. I didn't really expect anything to happen, but I realized I did have to learn how to at least draw the Hebrew letters properly.
Okay.
And that, you know, sort of, to be able to read Shakespeare, you have to be able to read and write English.
Sure.
All right. So I sat myself down. This was before computers, at a drawing board with a calligraphy pen and a lot of paper, and I literally sat there for 16 hours drawing over and over again the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And what happened was, at some point, I got kind of dizzy, and I really didn't know what was happening. I was very tired. I was sleepy. Maybe this was based on sleep deprivation. I don't know. And I felt that I really don't have good language for this. I guess I'm making my point. You can't describe these things. I felt like I was kind of in a tube, in a tunnel, a vertical tunnel, the walls of which were turning around me, and they were made of kind of flame, and they consisted of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet connected one to the other in a kind of continuous stream
wow.
that I was in the middle of. And I got really terrified. I mean, this had never happened to me before. I this is not